Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey. It is Healthy Gut Girl, and it's Christmas time. Almost Christmas time. And I'm coming to you live from deep inside your large intestine. And this is stuff your doctor should know. And deep inside your large intestine today is important. It's always important that we're here because, as we know, most of the microbiome exists. Do you know that we have like 2 to 3 pounds of bacteria in our guts?
Just in the gut.
That's like a sack of potatoes, you know? That's a lot of matter.
2 to 3 pounds, that's a lot.
It's a lot of matter. and it's fascinating to me. But I wanted
now, that's just an estimate.
Everybody's different. Everybody's body's different.
Not like someone went in there and scraped out all the microorganisms and weighed them.
The microbiome.
Well, they're microorganisms, all of them.
I mean, everything can be measured. I guess they take one and they measure it, and then they, guesstimate how many, multiply that
it's
by
like guessing
a
how
trillion.
Many stars are in the universe.
They can do that. They can do that with math.
It's a guessing.
It's not something I can do, but somebody out there can do
theoretical
it.
Theoretical microbiome.
Like if Neil deGrasse Tyson was here right now, he'd be like, there's 5,000.
I'll pose it to you this way.
He's a funny guy. He's a really funny guy.
He's a funny guy.
Yeah.
So the microbiome and the 2 to 3 pounds of a sack of potatoes in your gut.
That's me, not him. I just use layman terms.
Regardless, that's a lot.
It is a lot. It makes me think about the paunch manure story I told you about. Ages ago. Yeah.
Remind me.
Well, just that, cows have 2 stomachs, right? And I'm not an expert at this, so I can't tell you for certain which part of the cow this comes from, but I think it comes from the second stomach or maybe the first. But it's called paunch manure. And it's just this manure that comes from a cow, one of the cow's stomachs, and it's filled with beneficial bacteria. Like it's insane how much bacteria is in this part of the cow's stomach. And when you go to the market, you can buy, not like Ralph's or Whole Foods, but when you go to like a local farmer's market and you go to the butcher or, the person who sells the beef and the buffalo and all that, and you ask them if they have paunch manure, you can order it from them. And they bring it to you in blocks. They look like little blocks that you would, like adobe bricks that you would make a house from. And it stinks to high heaven, as you can imagine. But you give it to your dogs, to your pets.
And this is the actual stomach?
No, it's the stuff inside the stomach.
Just call it manure because obviously it's
because it really is. It's like poop.
But it has to go through the whole system before it becomes poop.
I think it's
poop,
the first stomach. So it's not the last bit where it is poopy and gross. It's like earlier than that. And I don't know how a cow's digestion works, but anyway, I'm sure if there's an expert out there, you can email me the facts because I'd love to know. But you basically get a brick of this, and we had our 3 dogs, and you just cut a brick, a chunk off, and you throw it in the backyard, and they go nuts. It's like doggy crack. Like they go bananas. They just start like chowing down. It's like In-N-Out Burger for them. They're just like, yeah. And then they just stop. And then you try to give it to them for their meal tomorrow, and they don't want any. They know when they're done, when they've had enough of it. It's like they know exactly how much bacterial load they need from it.
Interesting.
Is that crazy? And it's super cheap. It's like, as cheap as poop should be, I guess.
Yeah, when you go to Google, paunch manure for dogs comes up in the second highest search rating for it.
Yeah. It's so good for them.
Fresh tripe dog food reviews. Yeah, that's interesting.
It's so good for them. It reminds me of this one of the few arguments my husband and I have been in with our friend Steve, Steve Cassess, so funny. Steve, such a funny
sure.
guy, East Coast. Anyway, we're all sitting in the car together driving somewhere, and And we were talking about how George, our dog George, the Basset Lab that passed away this year, last year, geez, that he loved to eat shit. Like, he loved to eat. He didn't care what kind of shit it was. He was all about it. Charlie said one time he even ate his. They went camping, and he's like,
no.
I'm like, how did you know it was yours? Anyway, so I said, yeah. I said, well,
he
George.
Wanted the bacterial load?
Exactly. So I said, I think he really wanted. I mean, I'm on the verge of gagging right now. It's so gross. But he really liked cat shit. Like, he would eat it right out of my cat's butt. Like, he thought he was a Pez dispenser for poop.
Dogs eat junk.
I know.
Oh, my
so,
God.
And George had a particular fancy for it. So I said, yeah, well, it's usually indicative of a dog not needing, or a dog needing, you know, more protein in his diet or more bacteria for his bacterial load. And then Charlie, or maybe it was Steve, I forget, I put it out of my memory because they laughed at me so hard. He goes, or maybe he just wanted a warm meal.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, no, I'm serious. And then they were like, yeah, like the dog knows he needs more protein. So
right.
He's like, I'm going to eat some cat shit because cat shit is 20% protein. So I'm going to undigested protein from this cat. No, I'm like, he intuitively, integrally knows he needs this. And
we like to believe that there's some kind of a higher intelligence going on with the dog eating.
I think
crap.
It's just insane.
We just don't know. I mean, we're just assuming that's the case.
He can't be that fucking stupid.
Yeah, trust me, I had a dog that, you know, when it vomited, it licked its own vomit.
Yeah.
I
well,
mean,
that's
and it,
a warm
there was
meal
no,
for sure.
Yeah, or the dog's just freaking hungry and is an animal and doesn't know the difference. You know? Just sees, oh, there's a chunk. I'm sorry, folks. I mean, that's just going to go eat it. It's undigested, whatever it is.
Yeah, because there is stuff in there that is necessary. It's the way a cow or a horse knows to lick a salt lick. Like, you know, salt licks aren't delicious. They're not like, oh my God, look at that salt lick. It's undeniably delicious. No, it's a freaking chunk of salt. So they know when they need salt, they lick the salt lick. So it's the same way an animal would know he needs to eat grass because he needs to induce vomiting because something's making him nauseous, or he needs to eat, you know, some dirt because it's got some minerals in it that he's lacking, or blah, blah, blah.
Now, didn't you have a guest that talked about this, like you take healthy fecal matter from a person and you put it into another person who has mm-hmm. cancer or something or an ailment and that healthy bacteria
mm-hmm.
influences,
that's the,
right?
The FMTs, the fecal microbiota transplant, right? And it is really, you know, I got to just disclaimer here is the fire. I'm like, my nose is running so hard and I need to just grab a tissue.
Oh, she's leaving. Turn the fan off while you're there.
Okay. But
yeah, folks, we have, as you know, it's all in the news. Southern California is on fire again.
For real. No, in a bigger way.
In a bigger way. It's actually close to us. You can actually, I was driving
on. It's 9 miles away.
I was downtown and I was, not downtown, I was coming into Santa Monica and I could see smoke plumes coming out off the hills.
Yikes.
Because the fire reached over at Skirball near the Getty Center, which is right at the top of the hill. Then it goes into the valley. So that fire like jumped over, and you could start seeing the smoke. I mean, you go outside; it's almost like it's snowing.
All over my car. Dropping. Yeah, I mean, I definitely can feel it. I think I'm super sensitive to it as well. Like I just, or maybe it's in my head. I just walk outside and take a few breaths, and I'm like, oh, I don't feel good.
And partly that too.
Yeah, but anyway, what were we saying about paunch manure and eating your own vomit?
FMT.
Oh, FMT. So yeah, so that's another. You know. I've been listening to Paul Stamets lately, who is the mushroom king. He's a mycologist. Probably the best, most renowned mycologist in the world, wouldn't you say? I think he is, but maybe that's because I don't know of any others. He's pretty up there. He's pretty spectacular and phenomenal. But I've been listening to him, and you know, he's talking about like the largest, I guess, living. The living thing or living is this in Oregon is this like myco piece of, it's like a gigantic fungal city, and it's something like 265 football fields large, and it's one huge organism of fungus. It's like a big huge mushroom. And it's like the largest living creature, right? Largest living animal known to man, because it's, you know, because mushrooms are more akin to humans than they are to plants. Like they're more similarly, you know, made up as a person is, as a human, as an animal, than as a plant. And that we actually come from fungus, and that we are primarily fungus, like not primarily, but our microbiome. Like when we say microbiome, when I say healthy gut, everybody thinks bacteria, like probiotics. But we aren't just made up of bacteria. You know, we're made up of viruses and fungus, a lot of fungus. And that's super cool. I mean, I was listening to that, like, you know, and they have this collective intelligence where they think that at some point they're going to be able to interface with these things and communicate with them. They're hoping. I mean, my brain popped when I heard that. I'd never heard that before. Did you know that?
I kind of figured they already were in some way when you ingest them.
Well, now you're talking about a whole different thing.
Well,
not
even just psilocybin mushrooms.
He means literally communicate in a language to them and understand how they thrive and how they create their own ecosystem and how they correct other ecosystems and how they heal. All these properties that they have that they can do, they're hoping that they can eventually literally interface with them and talk to them. I mean, talk about disclosure.
Or communication with that species.
Amazing. And I think that our planet was, you know, panspermia. I think panspermia is like when you go to another planet and or bacteria or whatever it is gets seeded onto this planet,
right,
and then onto a planet, and then that grows and creates a civilization of creatures or animals or life.
Well,
basically life.
That's definitely just proof of that. We are influenced by, I mean, there's cosmologists have talked about that. We are parts of stars.
Mm.
Just the molecules, all these meteorites that come into our atmosphere, and mm-hmm. they travel throughout space, and it's sort of like propagating our planet with these other species, microorganisms.
Well, do you ever watch Josh Gates?
I don't know who that is.
He has a show. He used to have a show called, actually it's back, called Destination Truth, and now Expedition Unknown. I think it's on the History Channel. And, you know, I'm just a sucker for all that stuff. Well, he did this little series of, like, looking for extraterrestrial life. And he's a very grounded guy. He's not wacko at all. He's not, like, automatically assuming that there is or that we have had visitors from outer space. So he's literally exploring the concept and the idea and the possibility. So he goes to the most compelling stories out there, and he investigated them. And one of the things he did was he visited this group of researchers in England that set off this like weather balloon with this box, and the weather balloon went up into just outside on the edge of space in our atmosphere, and then it automatically opens this drawer and it captures stuff from space. And then it shuts, and then once the balloon gets too high, it pops, and then it comes back down to Earth, and then they go and they get it. And then they take what's in that, and they put it in a like super powerful,
electron microscope,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, and then they found something on camera. He said, this is the first time anybody is seeing this. You know, this is the first thing, like, this is truly extraterrestrial life. This is extraterrestrial.
They found
life.
A live organism?
Yeah, it was. It looked like a little tiny. Like obviously, it was. I mean, micro. They had to use an electron microscope to see it, so it was itty bitty bitty. But he said, you know, this stuff's raining on us all the time.
All the time, right?
And that's exactly the case. Before anyone was here, before when this was just a rock, all this bacteria and fungus, which they think was the first organism to be considered life on the planet,
yeah,
was fungus.
We've talked that fungus. Some people have speculated. I mean, maybe you talk to the mycologist and he would know this best. But there are mycologists who say that they believe that the spore of the mushroom, they believe it was protected enough to travel through space and get through the atmosphere and then seed the planet. And it was put here for that divine reason. I mean, there. I have to do some research on that, but I've heard that.
Oh man, I could listen to this guy all day. He was wearing. He's just amazing. He just knows everything about this stuff and what, and it's all research based stuff. Like he's a very much a scientist, you know. And one of the things he was saying was about mental health. He was talking about how it's a shame that, you know, our elders, who are the people that carry the most knowledge of our planet, of humanity, experiences and memories, are the ones who start to have neuropathy and biological and issues with their brain and deteriorate. And it's really, really sad. And so he does all this work to try to harbor and maintain that and keep that from happening. And lion's mane is one of the best mushrooms. It doesn't have any psychoactive properties or whatever. And it's at least not that I heard. And it's in a few of Dr. Marshall's products, actually, the Premier Research Labs products. Maybe I can look it up real quick to tell you. Because I do have to talk about Premier Research Labs, actually, which I meant to do earlier. But
you're right about the lion's mane. That's not psychoactive.
Okay, right. And so he was saying, you know, that this stuff actually helps regenerate. And I want to talk to you about telomeres, that thing you sent me. But it helps to regenerate, neural pathways in the brain.
Yes.
And then we were all, in one of our other podcasts, we were actually talking about this too, which is, you know, that PTSD, they've done a lot of research with microdosing of psilocybin. So that's a psychoactive part of the mushroom.
Yeah, there are studies. They're now beginning. Well, now they're probably doing this now for the last 5 years. I know there are public studies that are showing positive results for PTSD, depression. And this is all using psilocybin mushrooms in low doses, not to where you're tripping and seeing colors, but where the beneficial effect of that is regenerating neural pathways. It's funny because I said this to you in the past. Every time I did mushrooms in the past for the hallucinogenic effect, as grand as the experience really is, it is truly profound. It's amazing. And it's not something you abuse, which people think that's like the gateway drug. It's not. You can't. Mm-hmm. That's something you just don't abuse. It's an experience and something that will shift your perception of life forever. But every time I did that, I always felt like something reset. Just felt renewed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether it was just being present more or something switched. And I've always felt like there's a benefit to this.
Right.
It just felt like that.
Well, I'm convinced that there's got to be a way for us to harness and to learn more to learn more about these things as an individual and like take them, add them into our, I mean, I already take a certain kind of mushroom blend in my diet and, I think I'd just like to explore more of that because I feel like it resonates with me that we should have a closer relationship with mushrooms. And I personally, as you know, can't take mushrooms. And I remember, I think it was Joe Rogan.
You mean you can't take these
psychoactive ones? And, you know, he was dogging on people who can't.
What do you mean you can't? What happens when you do
it? It's always been a bad trip, and I've only done it a couple of times. But and I've had moments that were cool while I was doing it. But for the most part, I'd say it was like 7 layers of Dante's Inferno for like 10 hours.
Is it just because you just have trouble releasing into it?
Well, that's what he was saying. He was saying that people who can't do, you know, have a solid, a productive mushroom trip are people who are grappling with their egoic garbage. And I'm like, that can't be true because I don't feel like that's me.
Well, you know, you do have this fear. You've told me this in the past. You have a fear like dying. Yeah, you have a fear of dying. And mushrooms is a big release. You got to let go. And some say you're actually getting close to dying. You are.
Well, how can that be enjoyable for anybody?
Well, if you let go, you might figure it out because it is enjoyable. If you let go and let it take you for a ride, that might be what he means about not letting go of your ego.
He did say that. He said you have to surrender. You really have to go on the ride.
And trust you're going to be fine.
Yeah, but what if you're not? Like, what if, you know, I might have said this in the past.
That's your ego. What if you're not?
Yeah.
Look, we live in Los Angeles. Are we okay with these fires? You're okay. You're walking around. You're
fine.
Yeah,
but there's some lucid control that I have. I can get in my car and leave. I can evacuate, you know? When you're like, when your face is melting off in the freaking bathroom mirror, you know, it's not a lot of control you've got over that. You know, when your entire reality just disperses into fractals.
True.
You don't, you can't get in your car and leave.
You have to kind of give it.
I don't even know what a car is when I'm that high.
You think you just leave your body and then that's how you excavate.
You know, I do one thing about me, and this is what Charlie said. You know, he's like, maybe it isn't an ego thing, because I do grapple with that. I'm like, damn it, I don't want it to be that. Charlie's like, maybe you're just super sensitive and you're just overdosing. Like, lower the dose, man.
Well, that was a second concern I had. Maybe you should just try a lower dose next time.
Because I can't do anything like that. I can't smoke pot.
Who
I can't
gave
take
you
edibles.
The dosage? How long was it? We're talking,
dude, I've
like,
done
high
it.
School?
No. This was with someone who was pretty well. You know, but they didn't think in terms of, they'd never had a bad trip. So they weren't thinking, oh, I need to ease in with this person because she's sensitive, you know. We didn't know that. Like, you literally give me cough syrup and crazy shit happens. So I think it has to do with my biochemical makeup.
It sounds like they may have just given you a little too much of what you could have handled.
Yeah, every time that I've tried it. But
you'll have to do it in stages. Start with like a half a gram.
Yeah.
Okay, bring it up. Okay, you know, for you, you'll start like 3 p.m. You're like, 6:00, I got the dosage. I'm good.
Good. Well, you know what's funny is, not funny, this is actually horrible. I don't know where I got funny from. But, you know, I knew a person, I can't give too much details, but I knew a person whose daughter was... Excuse me. She was in high school and she went to a party and she'd never done drugs ever. And she smoked out of one of those volcano things, those volcano bongs. You know, it's like this huge...
Looks like
I don't
a didgeridoo. I don't know what the...
It's like this massive... No, it looks like one of those things at the car sales, car sales lot that have air blown up them. They're big tubes and they've got
you mean
hair.
Like, you mean,
and they like dance around. They're like... Meh.
Vaporless. It's got smokeless and you just inhale from the bag.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. It's like I don't know what it's called.
That's intense. I did that in Amsterdam. That was intense.
I'm such a rookie with this stuff. Everyone else, and I live in Venice. People, I'm sure, are like, you're not a true Venetian.
Yeah, and unless you did 45 drugs under your belt, then you're a true Venetian.
Yeah. So anyway, she was at a party and she smoked pot for the first time from one of those things. And she had a horrible trip, couldn't come down from it. It was like days that she was really, really sickened by it and tripping out, like super paranoid, but also sick, like throwing up and stuff, and hadn't had any alcohol, just that. Well, I can't, let me see, how do I tell the story? Because I can't reveal too much about it. She is fine after a week or so. She's back to normal. But she goes to school. She gets a phone call. The mom gets a phone call from the school to come and pick her up. She was walking around the school and had taken her top off and was walking around with just her bra, took her shoes off, and was talking about, she was talking to Jesus. She said she could see Jesus. And this continued. Like, they picked her up and then they took her somewhere to be seen by a doctor. And anyway, long story short, within 3 months, this poor girl is diagnosed with schizophrenia. So this person came to me, and so I was researching some stuff about it, and it turns out that it isn't that it is rare, but it has happened where smoking marijuana has, in some people, triggered schizophrenia. Now, mind you, this girl ran in their family. Like, the uncle of this girl was schizophrenic, and they had it in their family. And so I was like, I've never heard of that. I was telling her, you know, giving her some ideas for nutrition and whatever, but I never heard of that, and I thought it was kind of like not true. And I think it's a coincidence. And then I started doing research, and one of the things I found was an article in like Time magazine. I think it was Time. where it was in that, it was in the actual, this national magazine, this talking about this. Very,
about
very.
About THC triggering
schizophrenia.
If you're predetermined
it didn't
for
say,
it?
It didn't say that people were predisposed. It just said that there was a couple of cases that had been studied and that it
and these are very, very rare, obviously.
Very rare. But I know. I mean, you know, I'm a
cautionary tale for anyone considering it.
I'm a huge proponent of, you know, CBD and CBD right. oil and from hemp and CBD with THC. I think it works for a lot of people. I've seen countless people that have children with cerebral palsy and epilepsy and all sorts that totally have, you know, the quality of their lives increased dramatically because of this stuff. So I'm not trying to throw shade at it. I'm just saying.
In your experience, this is what you've come to.
I had to research it because of a situation that I came across. So, but yeah.
Well, I don't now. Since we segued a little bit, I think what you were trying to get to is the possibility that mushrooms may trigger something else in terms of.
I don't think we segued at all. I think it's just that those are the kinds of things I get afraid of when I'm tripping.
You think that you're gonna you're tripping like, oh no, I'm gonna grow a third. You know,
I'm like, you know, you see these people walking down the street over on the Santa Monica Promenade and they're like eating cigarette butts or they're like pounding themselves in the head with their fist and stuff and talking, screaming at the walls. I'm like, how did they get there? Maybe they didn't ever came back from their mushroom trip. Maybe they never came back from their acid trip, you know, and that's scary. That's scary stuff, man. And I don't know that it would change if it was ever regulated, because even Paul Stamets was saying, you know, that it's different for everyone. It's so individual, just like everything. We're so complex. We're such a complex organism, just you and me, so different from each other. You know, I could take 2 aspirin for something and you need 4.
Right.
Or, you know, we're so
different.
Which
is why when medicine is approved, it has to go through so many people, because we're like software, man. We're like computer programs. You just put something there, it just throws off the one little thing. You just don't know what it's going to happen, and that's why you experiment. Yeah, I mean, I guess if you look at the pharmaceutical industry, wow, look at all the issues that come out of just taking those. When you start messing with your, you know, those switches in there that are releasing this chemical, that hormone, when you're doing this. God, it's like, yeah. Okay, you're in the kitchen. What's going to happen?
Right.
We just don't know.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because when I work with people, I have there's very few things I won't work with. Like, you know, if someone comes to me and they're like, oh, you know, I've got terminal something. I'll take them on. You know, I'm not afraid of that. I'm ready to help them and help upregulate digestion, because I believe no matter what you're suffering from can be addressed first with, you know, regulating your microbiome, you're upregulating your digestion and so forth. But if the person has a history of mood stabilizers, antidepressants, any kind of pharmaceutical mood-altering drugs, has a history of it. Not just, oh, I was on this for a short amount of time, but I mean like, oh, since I was 15, I was taking, you know, Prozac, that kind of thing. I can't work with them, because I want to, but just over the course of 10, almost 12 years now, I just know that it throws such a wrench in the biochemical spokes of a human being when you are hijacking your endocrine system by continually taking a pharmaceutical that tells your endocrine system to stop doing this and do this instead, and fills up your receptor sites of different hormones with a synthetic substance, that it's anybody's guess what can happen with you. Like, you know, you're supposed to have a reaction to this particular vitamin as most humans would, and you take it and you have the opposite reaction. That kind of stuff happens all the time.
Because now when you start giving a protocol that's more natural, organic in nature, even those can throw off the body in ways that you just never expected.
It's unbelievable. I've had people, you know,
is that right?
I've had clients who will take a greens mix powder. Something as simple and wholesome.
Innocuous, too.
A greens mix powder. Well, some of them have chlorella and they have detoxing capabilities because they're so rich in certain chelating herbs and grasses and things like that. But for the most part, gentle. And we start them on low doses. So you're just taking, like, let's say a Whole Foods Green Vibrance, you know, has some probiotics in it, has a bunch of different types of minerals in it, and it's just really, really good for you. And you just start with a low dose, and you mix it in water and drink it. And that should be super, super, super easy, gentle. And then they're fine. And then the next day they have it, only they had it maybe an hour earlier, and maybe they had some scrambled eggs right after. And sick as a dog, dizzy, reaction, histamine reaction, like the craziest stuff that goes on. And, you know, you can say, oh, that person has SIBO, or, oh, that person's got a, you know, you just don't know, because they've been on these drugs for so long that it complicates the outcome. It complicates even their symptoms. Sometimes aren't real. They'll have one day, it's almost like ghostly symptoms where they'll feel like they're having some kind of like a histamine response to something, like an allergic reaction to something. And they'll do the same exact thing the next day and won't have that. So it's like, it's very difficult to work with people who've been on those drugs. And my heart goes out to them, because it's a tough deal.
Does it take just that much longer for, if you wanted to work with someone like that?
If I'm being perfectly honest, and I try always to be, I can't. I haven't done it.
Like the body does not correct itself. If they stop taking the drugs, say, over a year, even then, the body has still made those adjustments that just doesn't return normally? Is that kind of what happens?
I have had success with people that were on drugs as teenagers and then stopped, and then, you know, then they worked on their gut, and then I've had success with that, but never with, like, ongoing usage, consistent usage for more than 2 years consistently, I would say. Less than a year, especially if they've done it for like 2 or 3 years off and on, that I've seen a lot of, and I've seen people heal really easily from that. But people who have consistently taken an Ativan to go to bed at night, or quarter of an Ativan, and then the next morning they, you know, have to take their Prozac and, you know, or whatever, for the last 10 years or 7 years consistently, I have zero luck with that. I'm sure someone out there does, especially if they're continuing.
So once that person goes down that road of taking these antidepressants, they're kind of stuck in the system, isn't it?
I'm not going to say that, but I can't help
them. No, you
can't. And maybe someday I can.
Maybe someone can, right?
Maybe
right.
Maybe I can someday. But right now, I have not had any success with that. I don't know where to go. Everything, every trick in the book. And I'm talking about, well, here's another thing I should say, is that usually when people have that kind of history and are on those types of drugs, it's difficult for them to have a committed level of, commitment to a program where they can completely shift their lifestyle to like taking supplements every day, working on their gut every day, sticking to the total gut makeover and the foods that are important to help upregulate digestion every day. When you're dealing with depression and mental, you know, neuropathy or whatever you're dealing with that's going on in the brain, it's hard to commit to something. It's hard to stick to a workout plan. It's hard to get out of bed, you know? So now you're dealing with that. So there's multiple hurdles, I feel like. And I'm still trying. It doesn't stop me from trying. But, you know, yeah, that's just, it goes to show you how potent, how incredibly potent these pharmaceuticals are. So I can't wait for the day. You know, there's a proposition to try to legalize psilocybin mushrooms in California.
Yeah, you know, because it's this is one of the few states that you can't buy mushroom spores in. Like in New York, in most states, I think there's 3 states that you can't deliver spores to. Idaho, California, and I think it might be Georgia, and maybe one other. 3 or 4. Yeah, because in most other states, you can buy the psilocybin spores and grow your own. California, you can't.
That's so weird.
It is so weird because, look, it's not something that gets abused. I mean, we were just talking about this. I think it's a great initiative. It should pass because the benefits, and I'm telling you here, I've been hacking myself lately, as the term that Dave Asprey uses. Mm-hmm. I'm using myself as an example, talking about microdosing.
Right, do tell.
In the last 5 days, I've microdosed 4 of them. I missed yesterday. And so I tried, I think I'm using maybe way less than a gram, or just about less than a gram. And I'm just putting it in my tea. I make some green tea.
So you're tripping right now? No. Is that why you showed up in a singlet and a clown nose?
I'm wearing my bra.
My bra.
I got a bra.
Okay, I'm wearing my bra, you know, the one I have.
The one with the fur around it? I love that one. It just feels so good to rub my bra. So I just make it in tea. I add some honey. I put it in the Vitamix, and I pulverize it. So it's just completely dissolved.
That's how I make my mushroom tea, except it's not psychoactive.
Oh, well, instinctively, I went there. Hmm. I went to that. And then I will tell you this. Right off the bat, I have no desire to drink coffee.
Ooh.
Within the last 5 days, as much as I thought about going to it, mm-hmm. my body's like, no, doesn't want coffee at
all.
So that's one of the benefits I've noticed. So from the first day, I knew I could feel it in my body. I just feel a little lighter, more present.
Mm-hmm.
But the main thing is I found is there's a current of well-being and smoothness that's running. Like there's
nice.
A current, and above is my ego that wants to go to reaction, that wants to go to the same thoughts I have about just being angry about where I work or the situation with my apartment, you know, just life stuff.
Yeah.
And so instead of going out of control, I start going there, then I just take a deep breath, and there's this current there that says, no, everything's good, everything's fine. This undercurrent of smoothness and well-being that's there.
I love that.
It's still here. I'm more present.
Because, you know,
I'm breathing.
People that are on antidepressants and mood stabilizers, they don't say they have a feeling of well-being. They say they feel like zombies.
And out of control, right?
Well, no, not the antidepressants. They feel very even keel, but no highs, no lows, no, you know, you don't feel that joy. You don't feel the points in the day where, you know, you get a little excited about the fact that you're going home in a little while, or the fact that you can't wait for dinner because you have a roast in the crock pot.
On the EKG, yeah. You're just a flat
or
line.
Yeah, or low lows, you know.
Low.
But then after a while, all that sticks around are the low lows and that zombie feeling of like life is just dead. What's it called? Flatlined. So I like the idea that micro dosing of mushrooms would actually not do that. It wouldn't sedate you in any way, but actually bring more control and more presence. That's,
so even though
awesome.
I could walk into work and I'm just calm and cool, and I think I might be just not flatlining, but just I might be just in my world. But then someone starts talking to me, and I'm right there.
Yeah.
Like I spring to action, and it's
wow.
just being present.
What a great plug for microdosing of mushrooms.
Well, it's interesting you say that, and I'll just briefly just mention this. I had been thinking about it because I had a conversation with a friend of mine way back, and he was telling me some instances where he knew of a doctor claiming that he was microdosing and came up with some astounding experiments, or he might have invented something. I don't know. He was telling me some story where he attributed whatever he contributed to science to being from microdosing. And then I happened to be thinking about this lately, and then there was this TED talk of a guy talking about microdosing. He goes, right now I'm on psilocybin, you know, I did this morning. And he's like, I've been doing it for 90 days, and he just kind of went off. He's like, this is what I've noticed. I've been more creative. I've been doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when I went, you know what? I've been thinking about it. I watched this video, and then that's kind of when the universe
cool.
kind of spoke the song to me.
Well, I think – so let's get a little spiritual with this. You know, I really, really believe in God's medicine. You know, I believe that there is a lot of medicine on this planet that we you know, that was put here for us to heal and thrive
definitely,
on. And
definitely.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're depressed, you can't be creative, you know? And I feel like something that that we need is energy, you know, we need healing, we need to be able to absorb our nutrition, gut health. So what's, I'm trying to wrap my brain around this right now. It's kind of big. It's big in my brain, so it's going to be big. Okay. Ready? Because our microbiome consists of fungal components to it, as well as bacterial and viral, parasitic, I feel like we are part of the microorganism that is the planet as well. And the fungal aspect to the planet is also a similar, Like, I wonder what the percentage... I think Paul Stamets said the percentage of soil that we walk on, that a living soil, not like garbage, but living soil that you walk on the planet, is something like 35% fungal, I want to say. Mm. I might be wrong with that percentage, but similar. It's definitely around there somewhere. That's crazy. That means that this planet is like 35% fungal. And so I think we are just a microcosm of that. So so people think fungus, they think candida, they think bat, but candida.
That's the overgrowth of fungus out of control, right?
Yes, exactly. Because the fungus, candida, is there as our friend, right? Candida, right. For those of you that don't know this, because I'm always talking about it, it's actually there to come in to rescue you from foreign invaders and from leaky gut. It tries to go in and heal and seal that gut, and it tries to do things for you. It tries to do you favors. But because it feeds on sugars, if you have a crap diet or you have, you know, a disturbed microbiome, it can overgrow and become pathogenic, right? And so, but, you know, to bring it into balance, like with the planet, like if you allow, I don't know, I'm trying to go somewhere with this, but I feel like we need to once again have a relationship with,
well,
with,
I, you're
with
kind
fungus.
Of, I kind of get this idea, this vision, when you think about the planet as this big cell, and then you have all inside the cell, what do you have? Mitochondria, all these other organisms that live within it. We, I'm sure, in some kind of cosmological sense, we are playing that role.
Yeah.
We are part of the environment. We are microorganisms ourselves.
Yes.
Right? We're like the worker bees with the hunt.
Yeah, no, you're right. Correct. That's exactly right.
We have consciousness of it.
And I think we're not even on the edge of grasping, at least not you and me, but more so than some people and less so than others, is that we're on the edge of fully grasping the greatness of the microbiome, you know, and how someday, probably not in our lifetime, but someday that's what medicine will be. It'll be, doctors will only be focusing on bringing balance to the microbiome. They will just be looking at you as a full global entity, as a full microcosm of, and looking and saying, okay, clearly this is out of balance. There's too much of this fungus and that, and just offset it by adding more mushrooms.
Or we're going to add more alive organisms into your body, just like stem cell is doing that very same thing.
Stem
right?
cell FMT.
Yes, you are injecting what? Live organisms into your body to heal the area that needs repairing.
Right.
You know, use what we are. You know, we are part of this huge, vast network of microorganisms.
Yeah.
Why are we not healing ourselves with these microorganisms?
Right. You know, that reminds me of a question that was sent to me about, actually it was sent by Sam. I love mentioning Sam.
Sam, I am.
She sent me a question, a text. I get these random texts from her. It's like, you know, 2 a.m. my time, and she's in the UK, and I'm like, and it says something like,
"Cat, do you know what time it is over here? I just want to ask you a question."
She doesn't care what time it is. She does not care what time it is.
You ever do Pilates in
the nude?
Yeah.
She would know the answer to that. No, she says things like, she'll send me a text, and it'll say, Why does hair of the dog work? Clearly, she must have been anticipating a hangover or trying to heal from a hangover that day, recover. And she's like, why does hair of the dog work? So I could just imagine
it
she
never
partied.
Never worked for me, but it does work for some, I guess.
I think she partied the night before and then was hungover. And then she realized around 2 or 3 o'clock or whatever that if she had a glass of wine, all of a sudden she felt better. And she's like, why does hair of the dog work? And for those of you that don't know what hair of the dog works, it's or what it means is, you know, it's a saying that you
have
ingest
the hair, ingest the piece of the hair that gave you the.
Well, not you don't ingest it; you put it on. Like if a dog bites you, you take the hair of that dog and you rub it into, or you make a poultice and you put it on the wound.
Poultice? What's a poultice?
You know what a poultice is?
No, what's a poultice?
It's like a little pack. It's a pack that you make of like, you know, like you can make a mustard poultice where you take mustard seed and you grind it and you use coconut oil or castor oil. And then you put it between two pieces of flannel and you put it on your chest for respiratory infection. Or you take some garlic and you mash it up with some other anti-infectives and you make a poultice and wrap it around a wound on your foot. Or it's like a... It's like a...
Interesting.
Yeah.
Again, using microorganisms and the
so you take... So you like make a poultice from the dog's hair. And well, doesn't that make sense?
Antidote to the poison.
Because think about what a dog does when he gets hurt. What does he do? He licks it.
Right.
And he's getting all those microbes off of his tongue and saliva onto his wound. And those microbes go to work and start to help heal the area. So if he bites you, the idea is not lick yourself, but to actually take his microbes and have his, you know. Now, I don't even know if that, I'm sure it's true. I don't think it's an urban myth. I think it's probably real. It makes sense to me. And, So the idea with a hangover is that when you drink too much the next day and you feel like shit, just drink some more of what you had the night before and it'll make your hangover go away. And I think I'm going to have to guess at why it works. She was saying, why does drinking pink salt work, you know, and water work? And you say that too. You're like, if I have a little bit of pink salt in some water the day after a hangover, I feel
no,
like
the night of while I'm drinking. Yeah, before I go to bed, I don't wake up with a hangover.
So that's something I've always told that people is to take like a half a teaspoon of pink salt and a quart of water or a teaspoon if you can handle it. And you drink it. Mark is saying he does it the night before. I'm saying you could do it the next day as well. Because basically...
It's harder the next day. It takes a lot more.
Yeah, right? Because you're already on the verge of puking.
When you're already dehydrated, it's that much harder just to rehydrate yourself when you're dehydrated.
Well, that's the issue. That's why it works. That's why that works. Right. Is because you are dehydrated and it hydrates you. But also, you know, massive depletion of minerals when you drink alcohol. Alcohol is so toxic. It is... One of the most toxic things that we ingest as humans, besides, you know, breathing pollution, is alcohol, and it depletes, it taxes your liver.
I have a conspiracy about alcohol. I think it's being pushed upon society to keep people ill, because every TV show you watch, every character
is drinking, is a drunk,
or is a recovering alcoholic. Yeah, it makes for a great.
Or socially. It's just like, you know.
I had to stop watching Ray Donovan. I'm like, if they would drink any more whiskey in this show, I had to stop. I'm like, if you're not paying attention, you're like, okay, I want to go get some whiskey. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be drinking that stuff. It's the stuff that's most available, and it's the worst for you.
Right.
Unless you want to have a few laughs now.
But it's so fun.
Right? So I'll backtrack on that. It's the best. It's worst for you, and it's if you're drinking it way, way too much. Once in a while, for a few laughs, social occasions.
There's so many things. The list of things it's bad for, especially if you're not if you're drinking wine, and it's not organic wine, it's one of the most highly, I say, pesticided. I don't know if that's a word, but pesticided crops, one of the top five is grapes. And that means you're drinking a lot of bug juice, you know, of insect.
Bug juice.
Of insect, not bug juice. Bug juice would be good.
Bug juice would be better, right?
Right, yeah. It would be. No, of bug spray. And that is super toxic. It's an endocrine disruptor, so it affects your hormones. So all of us women who love to have some red wine at the end of the day and we're dealing with hormone disruption and estrogen dominance, guess what? And don't shoot the messenger. I get it. I feel your pain, ladies. But it's not helping.
Yeah, because I've sat with Catalina while we drank sake. Hey. Oh, not that. Her husband and I would go out. We're like, yeah, another sake would be great. Why? Because it feels good.
Yeah,
so we know the cost.
We do, and more so than most, which is crazy that we still do it. But anyway, it's good to take big breaks. Like, you know, we should probably do a little challenge and probably go without for a while after the holidays. I like to do that in the new year, is just like take a whole month and not have anything except things that are going to nourish the body. And so, you know, just stop drinking for the whole time. Don't smoke. Don't do whatever it is you do, and that's killing you. And just, you know, then go back to it later. And then do a whole month where you drink every day of your life. Oh. And then, anyway,
come
so going
full
back.
Full circle.
So let me guess. So my guess would be, my educated guess would be that when you're hungover, your body is trying to deal with the effects of the alcohol in the system. So when you drink the alcohol again, maybe the system, the part of your liver that is trying to filter and clean your blood shifts off and goes back to just handling the ingestion of it and not so much the filtering of it. I mean, that to me, like, okay, So the body goes through two different phases of liver detoxification twice a day, I believe it is. It's a phase one and phase two liver detox, and that gets upregulated a couple times a day. And so maybe when you go to sleep after you've drank and you wake up in the morning and you don't feel well, the body is in its phase one of liver detox, which means it's dumping the toxicity into the body, and that's making you sick. It's overloading your kidneys and your system with this toxicity, and it's giving you a headache, and you're dehydrated and you're depleted. And then when you drink it again, like I have another glass of wine to make the hangover go away, it downregulates liver detox. So now your body's not dumping, but rather dealing with the ingestion of it instead. I think that's a relatively educated guess. But if someone knows the real answer to that.
I mean, I just came up a quick article here, and it's they don't know if there's actually enough proof that says it does work.
Oh, but, no, it works.
But it's just because of the booze impact on neurotransmitters. That's probably where most of it happens, that it's affecting your neurotransmitters. And you get that boost of, would be like GABA or something, where your body just goes into a pleasure receptor. So that might just override the discomfort for a little while.
Some kind of overriding happens, right, where it says, okay, it's time to... that makes sense as well. And maybe it's both. Maybe it's a biochemical process that happens in the gut, in the digestive system, like with the liver, but also in the brain. Because, you know, something that also helps, and I don't want to endorse this or promote it, but it does help, is if you take like a quarter of a Xanax the night after you've partied, usually you wake up and you might feel groggy from the Xanax, but it eliminates the hangover in most people. And that's because it overrides whatever biochemical garbage is happening in the brain.
Either way, that is one pill I will not take and don't take and don't even enjoy. I think I took a half a Valium or Valium one time. Someone gave it to me. And I felt like disconnected.
A Valium is not a benzo, though, is it? That's a very different experience, I think.
But after that, I went, I am not taking pharmaceuticals for any kind of...
Yeah.
I will not do it. I will try to avoid it at all costs. Unless I'm on deathbed and I need something right away, I'll do it.
Right.
I wanted to say something to you. We were talking about mushrooms. I want to go back quickly.
Go back.
There's this great show that my roommate... Not my roommate.
Diazepam.
What do
Valium,
I call my
by
roommate?
The way.
Diazepam?
Xanax is a benzo, and
God, I don't
anyway,
even know the difference.
Doesn't matter. Go on.
So there's this great show that my friend's been turning me on to. It's called Hamilton's Pharmacopoeia. Do you know it? It's on Viceland.
No.
Viceland. This guy, he's a scientist, and he goes and he's so intrigued by substances that give you hallucinogenic effect. I guess I showed you the one on the toad, that guy.
Oh, right. Okay, Alvarius. Yes. Hamilton's Pharmacopoeia.
It's amazing, the show, because he really gets into it. So I watched one last night on mushrooms, and he went all the way down to Oaxaca, what this place called Oaxaca, and they believe that I have a feeling when they said this, like they believe that the Adam and Eve, the Garden of Adam and Eve, she didn't eat an apple; it was a mushroom, but it was changed. And I went, yes, that's so right. That makes sense.
So first you have to believe that there was an Adam and Eve.
Yeah, well, first you have
which
to
might
believe
take
that
some mushrooms
was created
to begin with.
Yeah, I believe this.
I'm messing.
I think mushrooms are on this planet for a very good reason. And my colleagues will agree. They're like, yes, this is – if you do a cross-section of a mushroom, you can see that it looks just like the brain if it was a cross-section.
Mm-hmm.
Neurotransmitters, looks like the neural pathways.
Any mushroom, like even a cremini?
You know, I don't...
Because my creminis, when you cut them, when you do a cross-section of a white mushroom or a button mushroom,
it's
pretty vacant, which could represent some people's brains.
Well, I think he looked at one under a microscope. I saw it on a TED Talk way back, and I guess I'm not doing justice to the...
No, it sounds cool, yeah.
It is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But again...
So licking a toad. I think South Park did an episode about
toad
licking.
I got to go to Sonora. That's where
are you really going to try that?
I'd love to. That's an experience that I think I've been wanting to try, because I've just heard so many. Again, Joe Rogan talks about it and tremendously
about the DMT
as experience. Well, that's they might be doing the synthetic. I guess there's the synthetic, and then there's you go to a toad, the Bufo alvarius toad, and it's the only toad in South. You can't mistake this toad. It's the largest toad in North America.
That's big. Largest toad, when you say that, I've seen some large toads.
And unfortunately, they're in decline. And
Too many toad lickers.
So they're starting to get killed from crossing the road. People don't see them, and so they're...
Humans.
And they live in the desert, which is kind of unique. They live underground for 9 months. And when the monsoon comes in the summertime, they come out.
A lot of frogs do that.
And then they mate, and they come out for like a month or so, and then a couple of months, and then they go back under. So they're underground for most of the time.
Tripping, probably, right?
Not on their own stuff.
They're just tripping hard.
It's actually a defense mechanism for themselves.
Oh, okay.
Because these other bugs, they can't go on. They'll die as soon as they touch the
toad. Yeah, they just completely
freak out. That's just like when all you're doing is squeezing it like a wart. And then you just scrape it, let it dry, and you smoke it. And that you got to and they have profound experiences. People have said, you go out for, you're gone. It's a five to 10 minute experience.
Oh, really? Kind of like DMT in a way, but just a little bit longer.
It's DMT. It has another molecule added to it.
Okay.
It's like a dimethylene. I forget. It's not the synthetic. Synthetic is very close to it.
Well, tell everyone what DMT is.
Dimethyltryptamine. We have it in our body. It's in our brain, and then when you
it's produced by the pineal gland, right?
Yeah, in small amounts. And they believe that the hypothesis is that it's released when you die. It's right when you die, it releases, and which is means that people are having these tremendous effects while they're alive because you're doing it.
Why? So I had crazy thought the other day. I was like, why would nature create a creature, an animal? Why would we evolve to have free will? It doesn't serve us very well. This goes into my crazy brain and the discussions you and I usually have off topic when we're not recording, but we'll talk about it here, which is to say that, humans are so weird. Like, what are we even doing on this planet? We so don't fit into the matrix here. We so don't fit into what the planet is. Like, we're so different from everything. We're the only creature on the whole planet that has, this cognitive ability, this like free will. And why? Why do we have free will? It doesn't serve us any purpose. It would be better if we didn't. We probably wouldn't kill each other, and we probably wouldn't, blow the planet up, right? So kill the planet off. So what is the purpose of free will? And that makes me, that leads me to feel that there is this divine sort of like, there is God. There is a God. Because why would we, of all the creatures, be given this precious thing that gives us choice? So why did I bring that up? Because we're talking about DMT. And why would we need that when we die? Why would we need this molecule to express itself in our brain and it let us have this out-of-body experience before we die and see a tunnel? Like, what is the reason for that? There's no reason for that. Tell me.
We can just kind of spitball and just go off on this because I don't have... The answer, you must have a theory.
Or a guess.
Why? It's a chemical that opens a doorway to our consciousness. Maybe because we are we're in this biological meat suit, but we have this perception, and behind that is an awareness, and that awareness is, we're given life to it. But we've talked about this. Remember from Men in Black when that alien died, and you see this little alien inside a human being.
Yeah.
We are kind of accompanying that. So maybe by this chemical, it just allows us to release and go into that other dimension, which we are part of. And in this dimension that people have experienced, they say, I've traveled, I was in the presence of these other beings, aliens they were calling them, and I could hear them talking to me and having conversations. And now their experience is longer than what we're witnessing. They're going through a 5 to 8 minute experience, and yet they're having a profound life adventure. So, they're breaking the time barrier. They're breaking any kind of a dimensional, it's a trans-dimensional key to something else. That's just my theory. I haven't done it. Now, I just looked up the difference between DMT, which is they have, and the frog is 5-MeO-DMT. So it's a little different, but I think the effects are quite the same.
So did they alter it on purpose, the drug, DMT?
Well, I think when you synthesize it, they're making, I don't know that much about it. I just that you go, you can. The people have been doing this for a very long time. In that one series, they talk about how these people really venerate these frogs and really love them because they give them this great gift, and the people in the region believe this is a medicine. This is a medicine that teaches you about yourself and your body, and people are profoundly changed. Do people have bad trips? Some people have different reactions to them.
Right.
It could be harder on some people. Some people vomit. Some people don't. But the vast majority, like anything else, depends on where you are.
I guess, you know, if you're coming from a position of being a super skeptic, or maybe not even skeptic, but just like you don't believe in anything spiritual at all, you're just and maybe you're an atheist, or maybe you just don't have any spiritual inclination at all, right? Or maybe you're a scientist and you're an atheist and you're like, what is the reason? Why would the body create this ability to have this crazy trip right there before you die? You know, you can say, oh, well, it's released because someone is going through trauma. So the body, why? The body's just going to die anyway. You know, like, what difference does it make?
Well, maybe you say it as a trip. So think about it this way. The trip has a couple of dual meanings, doesn't it? So you're actually tripping, but you're actually taking a trip. Your consciousness is experiencing something quite different.
Double entendre.
You're taking a trip out of the ordinary. Man, we are...
No, but what I'm saying is, from a skeptic's perspective,
what
the hell is that stuff for? Like, they say, okay, that we have this ability in our brain. Human beings have this ability, this characteristic where we have a tendency to believe in a higher power, and that actually it actually benefits us because it keeps us from being so terrified of dying. That it there's a bunch of reasons why.
What if it was put on this planet for whatever reason to remind you of your spiritual divinity, that it's not just this three-dimensional world we live in. It's not just about paying these bills and working for a living and making greenbacks so we can live in nice houses, that we are greater than this experience.
I like that explanation, but it is stepping outside of the realm of what I was saying, like from a skeptic's point of view, what the heck is that stuff for? You know, why would your body produce that? And some people call it the spirit molecule, don't they?
Yeah, DMT. Right.
And
maybe it's responsible for when you dream. So when, you know, those dreams that you have that are, you could, you know, you've had those dreams where you're like, I experienced a whole other life while I was sleeping.
Right.
I don't know. I'd have to do some more research on.
We should. I think it's fascinating. I think it goes along with my concept about, you know, God's medicine. Like, there are things on this planet and things that we ourselves are capable of that connect us more closely to natural healing. And our body's natural ability to heal itself. And did you ever read Message Down Under?
No.
It's just this really easy read. It's an older book that I read that is about this nurse who is from here, somewhere in the Midwest, I think. And she does these talks everywhere. And forgive me for not remembering all the details. It's been a while. But she gets a phone call that they want her to come and talk and do a talk in Australia. And she goes... It's called Mutant Message Down Under. And she goes thinking it's going to be a regular thing where they put her up in a hotel and she goes into this ballroom and does this conference with these other people about whatever it is she's there to talk about. And at the airport, this Aborigine guy picks her up in a Jeep and they get in the car. He doesn't say two words for her. I think he's got her name on a card or something. Get in the car and they drive for literally like a day. Like, they're just driving and driving and this guy's saying nothing to her. And they finally get to this location out in the bush somewhere, just out in the outback. And it's a tribe there of Aborigines. And they take her clothes, they take her wedding ring, they take everything and they burn it. And they give her, like, you know, whatever simple
like
clothes to wear.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. And then they just set off on this walkabout together. And I mean, you know, I don't know if it's true. I don't know. But it's such a good book to read. It's really quick, like something you read on the airplane real quick. And if you're going like from here to the East Coast or something. And it's, but the things that happen where they're so connected to the planet that, and to the Earth's medicine, they use everything. Like, I remember this one part of the story where they're walking and all of a sudden this, like, it looks like a storm cloud is coming towards them, and it arrives and it's flies. And it's these horse flies that are massive, and they're flying in there. And she's standing there, and she's karate chopping left and right, and they're going up her nose and in her mouth, and she's biting them and freaking out and puking. And everyone in the tribe is just standing there. And then at the end of the book, she has this progression where she realizes that that the flies are what's cleaning them. And so she stands there and at one point in the book and has this realization as the flies do this spa treatment on her, she said, where it feels like they were...
This is fiction, right?
She doesn't say it is. She doesn't say it is.
This might be a true story?
I think it is. The way it's told is, and it's not a fictitious book, it's not in the fiction section. So, you know, but I think the average person who's a bit of a skeptic would say, BS! But anyway, she also witnesses a young child falling and breaking his arm to the point that the bone is sticking out. And they do a mud poultice on him and a mud pack on him. And the bone heals. Like, by the next day, his bone is totally healed. And
that's hard to buy, you know, bone sticking out and mud just miraculously. You know, that's when you start getting into, okay, you go a little too far with the idea that these things can heal without, you know, any interaction from humans, you know.
God forbid don't put a cast and give you some, you know, 1,800 milligram ibuprofen and take a damn x-ray to make that shit better.
Well, if the bone's sticking out, there, you gotta, you know, money ain't gonna put that bone back together. But I don't know, who am I to say? Maybe it has happened.
I mean, I don't know either. You know? It was a good read, but my point being was that, you know, the whole book, she becomes a different person because she realizes that medicine is the planet. Like, you are a part of the planet, and that, you know, to live in harmony with the planet. I know, very kumbaya, but, you know, you live in harmony and find ways to utilize the medicine that the planet provides. And that could mean flies coming and eating your boogers or whatever. But, you know, it's kind of like utilizing the Earth's medicine. Like, you very know, Native American culture as
yeah,
well.
That's true. And you can see how this can go off the deep end in terms of... going into this, going back in time to reverting back to an earlier time of medicine where you're trusting the witch doctor to heal you of polio, or when you had, and people die, you know, at the age of 40. Mm-hmm. And then we got to come back to, look, modern medicine, we're living to longer than most of us ever have.
Mm-hmm. But we're also a lot sicker in many ways than most
perhaps
of us.
There's that.
We lived to 75 in a diaper for 15 of those years because, you know, GMOs have wrecked your gut and you're on 20 different medications. So, you know, there's a trade-off, and I am all about progress, and I'm a capitalist, and I'm all about, you know, furthering the world by, you know, competitive.
Stem cells didn't come out of, you know, any kind of witch doctor or shaman.
Well,
you
know, no,
this is
but
what I mean, this is where.
But the hair of the dog did, you know, and so did other, you know, there for ages there was no. We only had ourselves to figure out how to heal our bodies, and that's the thing that didn't make any sense, but. When you, so I'm writing a book, as you know, and part of the book is about old remedies that we bring back into this, to now. And some people have always, like my mom is all, like the mustard poultice and stuff like that. My mom has been doing that. I had that done when I was a kid. I was brought up on enemas. You know, my mom is just that person. But I think we should bring it back, like as a movement.
Bring back what works.
Yeah.
Bring back what actually did work. Yes,
yeah. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that is so funny about some of these things, like the coffee enema and, you know, probiotic enemas and enemas in general, different types of castor packing and mud packing of the body. And, I mean, I've seen some... I would go as far as to say miraculous things. And I don't think that it's magic. I don't think it's witch doctor stuff. Like castor packing. Castor oil has a resonance. It's a vibrational resonance that's very, very, very high. The same way rose water has a very high vibration. And those vibrations, because we are energetic beings, those vibrations have an effect on our energetic bodies. So when you take that castor oil and you create a pack on the body, like say the liver or the kidneys, yes, you have your ribs there. So how could it possibly be helping your liver if it's sitting on top of your skin, your muscle, your ribs? how is it possible to even get near the liver with the Castor Pack? Well, it can do one physiological thing, which is extract or pull out toxins from the surface, from the skin there. But the vibration can help like a tuning fork to the meridians that run along the liver. The same way when you go get acupuncture, those meridians, they put that needle in, it barely goes into the skin, doesn't it? So that they're not trying to reach the gallbladder with the needle or your wherever your broken bone with the needle. They're trying to reach the meridian, which is the energetic channel that flows to and from the organ, helping nutrition gather there, helping blood flow there, helping energy and the cells and the mitochondria and the bacteria and the fungus. It's just addressing all of that, right, as a global entity. So when you do a Castor Pack, it's like you're taking a tuning fork to that area. So maybe your liver is vibrating at a level it shouldn't be, and the castor oil is somehow raising the vibration. You know, that shit's real. That's measurable subtle energy. That's measurable. It's like when you go to church and they start singing, everyone all of a sudden you feel the vibration raise. That's right. Measurable real right. Shit. You know, you can call it what you want, but that's real energy that's being raised. So you can do that with things. And so I think that castor packing and mud
packing that's the other area of science that just doesn't, that gets poo-pooed. Mm-hmm. Because it's so... How do you test it? I mean,
you can.
We have been, right?
Yeah, there's...
But how do you... Mm-hmm. I guess what the word is, how do you scientifically prove? I guess you can't.
I think that most scientists that get the money to do stuff like that don't have any interest in it. I think they're too busy wanting to deal with things that are far more effective, because even though castor packs are effective in many cases...
You think maybe it might just be a placebo effect? Because... I mean, there is that we know that in the pharmaceutical testing, that placebos sort of have the same results.
No, because I've done it on children. You know, I've done it on kids that are you know, totally paraplegic and 3 years old, and they have a noticeable reaction to it, you know. So I know that's not true for sure.
And I'm on your side. I agree with you on this.
I'll yeah, I mean, I you know, I think I'm a healthy skeptic, but I'm also open to a lot of shit, you know? I'm like...
Healthy gut girl skeptic. I love that.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm open to stuff. I'm open to crazy stuff. I want to believe.
I think most people feel that way. A lot of people. They just know there's something else working underneath everything that does work. There's things that you just can't account for that have an effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good vibrations, like you said. You know, putting a leaf next to you, and you can have an allergic reaction to a leaf that's right next to you that doesn't work with your body, I guess. What I'm trying to say is...
What?
Yeah, right. I was having this vision at the same time of... I saw this one movie where they were healing a horse. Instead of, like, giving them injections, it would just, like, they would take these certain leaves and wrap it around its ankle. And the leaves, and I guess just absorbing through the skin, would take away the inflammation or the soreness of the animal.
Sure. I mean, that's probably less than vibration. That is more to do with the medicinal properties of the leaf and, you know, coming into the skin and being absorbed into the body. Like, you know, taking, you know, banyan tree leaves or eucalyptus leaves or whatever, that's going to have, you know, when you get the oils extracted from those leaves, you can get medicinal properties from them, like with all herbs. But still, I think it's, I guess overall in this podcast, I feel like what I'm trying to say is I think there is, you know, I think in 50 years, hopefully, our level of understanding of the microbiome and medicine and our health is going to be, we're going to look back on these times like we were all barbarians, the way that we deal with medicine and the body and healing.
Don't you find that the more this gets validated or uncovered, you realize that there have been doctors and professionals in the past who've been saying this for eons, who just lost their voice over...
Yeah,
the dominant medical industry
that
squashed them. They said they know this stuff works.
Well, homeopathy is a good example. You know, that was the foundation of medicine in America for, you know, since America started, and then it got not at the beginning, but I forget what the year was, but it was the foundation of medicine. That's how people were treated, with homeopathy, and you know, that changed when money got involved, when the Rockefeller family got involved and started to literally sponsor schools. And it just was in their better interest to do more of a pharmacopoeia, you know, pharmaceutical-based industry. And I think that it's still there. You know, one of the most effective treatments I've ever had, ever in my life, was seeing this doctor in the UK who was a homeopath, who was using these machines that were, you know, like these German and Polish made, you know, technology, where it was measuring your, you know, vibrational energy to see what kind, like the Biomeridian. We have quite a few types of machines like that here that are able to discover if you have certain vibration of a certain parasite in the body, or a certain, you know, fungus or whatever is going on in the body, and it measures it out, and then it actually assigns you what it's like QRA, but just the quantum reflex analysis that I practice, except not manual, not using your hands. It's a machine. And then it assigns you these homeopathic remedies that are going to help you. And I, you know, paid like $500 to see this guy and another $300 for supplements. And I felt like, oh my God, like you sit there going, this is just hogwash. This is crazy. And then a year later, I just had my first year anniversary of not having my back thing, you know, the viral back thing that I've been suffering from almost my entire life. Going on a year now that I haven't had it, over a year. And I saw him last February, and that's a homeopath. Is that a placebo? Dude, I've been trying to get rid of this thing for a long time, and I've seen a lot of different types of specialists, and I've been doing, now maybe all the work combined has led up to this, and it then is helping now, mm-hmm. But it was a dramatic effect. Like, I'm so surprised. When I feel like it's coming on, I just take more of those homeopathics. I'm also, you know, I have my regular regimen that I do, but my supplements and, you know, my diet. But for the most part, yeah, it's the homeopathics had the biggest impact. And you show me a skeptic who wants to do homeopathics. There's no way. There's just not. They're not going to do it. Even though there's science behind it, good science behind it. Anyway, so I just really feel like there's another way to deal with the body, and has nothing to do with surgery and mammograms and, you know, invasive things. I think it's a more intelligent, elegant, non-invasive, spiritually connected to the planet and the you know, I like to say God's medicine, whether it be psilocybin or CBD or just herbs from the garden, rhodiola and ashwagandha and lion's mane and mushrooms. And I really think that that's what medicine's going to look like in 50 years, along with FMTs, with types of, you know, probiotic implants into the rectum so that you can re-inoculate the gut with healthy bacteria.
Now, I'll bring up this then. Isn't that being worked against, that kind of movement, by that? Remember the Codex Alimentarius? Mm-hmm. Remember that? That was mm-hmm. by the World Health Organization attempting to at least regulate all mm-hmm. homeopathic and supplements altogether. Yeah. Now, well, I mean, I don't know where that stands still, but...
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I think it fell through. Canada.
You know, Canada Research Labs had its. He had to kind of.
Well, they do that.
He had to bring down the quality of his products a little bit because of the FDA.
Yeah.
Because they were too damn good.
Yeah. Well, he couldn't have
live bacteria
in the product as a supplement. Right. You can have it in a food right now at the moment, but you can't have it in a nutritional supplement. But. You know, it's the FDA. We have, you know, extreme regulation here in America in some ways, and in other ways we don't. You know, it's funny. It's like pharmaceuticals are very overly regulated, believe it or not. Like they go, well, you said it earlier, they go through rigorous amount of testing to make it to your medicine cabinet.
To market.
Right. Yeah. But vaccines don't, you know, like they don't have any double blind placebo studies done on vaccinations yet. Like it's a weird dance being done. And so there is a bit of like political, I don't think a bit, there's a lot of political play that happens with the decisions that are made for drugs and whatnot. But What was the point of that? Oh, so the FDA regulating supplements and what I think is going to happen is, and it's already happening, is instead of just shutting them down or over-regulating them or doing these crazy things, what they're doing instead is big companies like Nestle are coming in and buying. I just posted this on my Healthy Gut Girl page on Facebook today. They're coming in and they're purchasing like Garden of Life, the brand Garden of Life, which is an organic whole food-based supplement. They come in and purchase it. And now they, you know, the quality of that product will diminish eventually, where they're going to say, you know what, our bottom line is this, and we need to go ahead and make manufacturing easy, so we're adding this magnesium stearate.
Like Amazon and, buying Whole Foods, now I go in there, I don't see as many organic items available at the buffet.
I thought that was just my organic, my Whole Foods. I went in there the other day, and it was like half produce organic, half not. I was really surprised. I couldn't find a lot of organic stuff.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. Even with their buffet, you say organic lettuce, organic spinach. I'm not seeing organic much anymore.
Interesting. Well, you know, when you start to grow like that, it's
well,
like
when you start having shareholders involved for profit, organic becomes too expensive.
It's too expensive, right.
Which means it's horrible for organic farmers then because no one's supporting them anymore.
Well, this brings up, well, there are. Well, I just think it's,
not with the big industries.
Yeah, I think the movement is growing. It's just not ever going to be as big as the other movement or the other existing machine.
You have your own organic garden. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Well, this actually brings me to kind of wrap this up because I was supposed to talk about this at the beginning of the podcast, but in regards to Premier Research Labs and Dr. Robert Marshall, as you know, everyone knows who listens to my podcast, what a fan I am. And he's my mentor and was my mentor. And one of the things about the Premier Research Labs brand of product is that it's a nutraceutical. It's something that has to be, the FDA requires that it's given to or sold to people under supervision. So basically you're seeing a practitioner and they're not prescribing, but they're recommending it under the guidance of someone who's a professional. And so they don't, Premier Research Labs doesn't sell to, that's why you can't go into most places and find some of their stuff, most vitamin stores but Amazon has, you know, taken to people who are rogue sellers of this stuff and selling it. And that's against the rules of Premier Research Labs because you may not be getting an authentic product and it may be overpriced. In fact, I was carrying some of Amazon's products, Premier Research Labs, through Amazon. And I looked one day and they had raised my HCL from $13 to $24 for HCL. And that's a $13 product, you know? So Premier Research Labs contacted me and we talked about it and they want me to take that stuff down. And I'm happy to do it. And in a deal we made is that I can now offer Premier Research Labs accounts to my listeners. And of course, clients, people who want to be clients. So basically, if you want to get Premier Research Labs prices, whatever the lowest price they can offer you, including when you buy a case of something like HCL or Pink Salt or Premier Coffee or whatever it is, you get a discount when you buy so many of them. And it's awesome. And you know you're getting exactly what you're paying for. It's coming straight from the manufacturer. They don't do FedEx. They don't get, nothing's irradiated. So if you're interested in doing that, just send me an email, venicecat@gmail.com, and then just introduce yourself if I don't already know you, and I can give you set you up an account. So I would just need your name, your first name and last name, and your address and your email, and that's it.
And then you just go to the Premier Research Lab site and you sign in with that information.
No, then I will start your account for you, and then you'll get a notification that your account's been open, and then you can
just order it from that link that you get.
From me. So once you send me to venicecat@gmail.com your inquiry about wanting a Premier account, I'll email. You'll get an email back showing your. Isn't
that
great? And
yes.
I thought, oh my God, this is so complicated. It's never going to work. How am I going to do this? Well, I already started it and I got so many emails and I just take a good 30 minutes out of my day or whatever. And I just send it. I just set it all up. And it's awesome because now I with comfort also because it's hard to find some of the products and I stopped putting them on people's programs or even offer or talking about them because you know, you need some supervision. So I would love to be able to tell someone, hey, I would love it if you started taking the, you know, B12 at this amount. And I'm able to do that now and give you products that, or talk about, recommend products that maybe you wouldn't otherwise be able to have your hands on because you're not a practitioner. So that's really cool. So again, if you want to be a part of that, just email me at venicecat@gmail.com.
And get your best products that you can buy in your system.
Fast. And they're going to start offering in a few months. They said in the new year they were going to start offering coupons for me. So I can, you can, you'll be able to put, you know, Healthy Gut Girl or my coupon, whatever, in the coupon code and get a 10 to 20% discount, which is even more awesomer. More awesome.
Awesomer. I love it. Perfect.
So, yeah. What else, guys? So, wanted to just talk about Total Gut Makeover as usual. Go there. Sign up before that price goes up again. You can go on there and learn how to upregulate your digestion. You know, I commented on this the other day. Somebody said on one of my groups, you know, I didn't know if I should come to you because all you do is work with the gut and I've got this problem and this problem and this problem. And I said, oh, wow, well, you haven't been listening to me then, because no qualified practitioner, and I'll say this again, and anyone who disagrees with me, I'm happy to have a conversation with you about this. No, zero on the planet qualified practitioner can help you without knowledge of the microbiome, period, let alone a physician. You have to understand. I don't care if you've got Raynaud's disease or you've got, you know, toe fungus or you've got a yeast infection or you've got whatever it is, a brain tumor, whatever it is, you cannot fully heal from that unless you address your gut, unless you upregulate digestion.
Second brain, the enteric nervous system, right. All those nerves that go right down there. There's more nerves down there than anywhere else in your body, right?
And they send messages to the brain. Right. I mean, it's a complex organism that to...
So think about all that communication that's happening instant all the time.
Constantly. And not just about your food. So see, people think, oh, you're dealing with the gut. She's only dealing with food. No. This has to do with every aspect of the human body functioning. What we talked about earlier with the microbiome being the know-all. It is you. And it's an elegant system that has to be addressed. And for any doctor, any practitioner, any health practitioner to give advice and it's not founded and grounded and rooted in the knowledge that you must be digesting your food effectively, you must have an upregulated digestive system, or you, that is the first domino to fall in illness. Someone's not operating from that point and they think they can help you with your hormones, find another person to help you.
I think what's happening is most people just don't believe it's that simple.
Well, it's not simple.
they don't believe that it's happening down there. Like, I mean, I could remediate my I told you about my friend of mine that she has the swollen knuckles.
All right. She has rheumatoid arthritis.
Right. And when you said just address the gut first and she'll start seeing improvement.
And she laughed.
She didn't believe that it was just as simple as dealing with the gut. Like, well, it doesn't make sense. It's like, wait a second, I'm taking medication from a doctor. You're saying go to the gut, which goes against what my doctor's saying. It doesn't make sense. So she just discounted it. She kind of laughed it off. I was like, okay, I can't go any further than that.
Enjoy that inflammation, honey.
Yeah, complete inflammation.
No, that's mean. I don't mean to say that. I mean, people will be ready when they're ready.
Why wouldn't you try the simplest thing first?
Because it's really hard to give up those things that bring us comfort. It's really hard to change your diet dramatically.
I don't think the comfort comes from going to your pharmacist paying $200 for a pill. I mean,
yeah, but that's not what they're thinking.
Maybe.
I think it's. But first of all, if your insurance covers it, why the heck would you want to pay $175 to see me? Which, by the way, is a steal. You know, if your insurance covers,
isn't it less than that right now?
That's to actually have a phone consult. Yeah, the Total Gut Makeover is $99.
$99.
TGM99, friends.
Come on, man.
TGM99 is the coupon code. TGM99. But anyway, so it's just funny. It's funny because that person who said that on my Facebook group is a practitioner. They actually said to someone else, because they were inquiring that they wanted to see me, and they said, I don't know if you should see her because she only focuses on the gut. And I literally LOL'd. Literally. I almost RFMLOL'd or whatever it's called.
Okay, I'm a little behind on the acronyms.
Rolled on the floor laughing out loud. Like this. Like that. As opposed to...
Well, she only deals with the gut. She doesn't know. Well, start there first, and then that's the roots. You know?
So basically ask yourself this. If you've done all these different things to get well and it's not working, maybe you haven't addressed the gut yet.
Right. Okay.
So that's that. And follow me on Instagram, because everyone is, because my followers, it's growing like mad. Thanks, everyone. It's like wildfire. And we got a new sponsor coming up soon. So we're going to talk about... I can't even say it because it's a super secret, but we got a new sponsor and it's exciting because we're growing so fast. And thanks, Mark, for being back here. We love you. We don't ever want you to go.
Thank you.
And you want to check out Mark's work. I hope
people don't think that I'm, here's the guy who does all these strange drugs.
Are you kidding? That's the best part about you.
That's the best part about me. Yeah, I am. I guess I'm that. I'm the other side.
The fact that you showed up with a singlet and a clown nose today is the best part about you. So you just have to stay. Right. No, we love that. I mean, we have to have the crazy guy.
I believe I do experiment a little more than most people, but
that's important. That's true. Need that. You truly are my guinea pig. What should we make you do next?
I'll let you know. I probably do it before you even suggest it.
Awesome. Thanks, everyone. We love you loads. Yay!